It's good to be here with you all. As Pastor Scott talked about, we are in this series called Becoming Human. And it's this idea that we, have you ever heard somebody say, we're just human? It typically means that we screwed up or that we messed up. And simply said is that because we're human, it separates us from God, and we see this disconnect between humanity and God. And what if we were to look at this different mindset here? What if we were to look at it and say, actually, if we embrace our humanity, because what we realize is that God sent Jesus on this earth to live amongst us, to experience what we experience, all the pain and suffering and the joy, all the emotions. He experienced all of that, and because of that, if we embrace the humanity, if we embrace the fact that God came on this earth and lived amongst us, if we embrace that humanity, does it cause us actually, instead of separating us from God, does it cause us to grow closer to God? So that's the series that we're in of Becoming Human, and what we're doing through all of this is we're actually looking at different parts of humanity, and today we're going to look at the heart. And this is something that when we think of the heart, we think of emotions, don't we? And typically when we think of emotions, what happens is we separate a couple things. And what I mean by that is some of us think of emotions and we have kind of a positive bend to them. The positive bend is we actually lean into our emotions. It's this whole follow your heart, right? And this idea of follow your heart looks like this. Where all of a sudden, it's not necessarily what you think is a good idea. You're just going to do something that you love to do. It's the idea that we separate the intellect from the emotional part of it. Or have you ever heard somebody say they thought with their heart and not with their mind? You see the disconnect here. And typically what that means is they made an emotional reaction and they didn't lean into a rational thought. That's one side of it. On the other side, these are the people who literally will avoid emotion anytime that they see it coming. This is something that you would look at and say, yeah, that's me right there. I'm going to avoid any kind of emotion. This is the Matrix, I think. I was never into that. But this is what it might look like for you. Any kind of emotion whatsoever, sadness, joy, anger, whatever it is, you avoid it. And typically, that can be avoided because of the pain that you've experienced before. It could be because you don't want to experience that hurt again. You don't want those ups and downs anymore. Other times, it might be linked to success. And what I mean by that is, if you look in our communities, if you look at what defines success, it's the idea of what kind of car you have, what kind of house you have, what community you live in. Those all happen typically because of the jobs that you have. And in this environment for our workplaces, you take emotion out of it. How many times have you heard we need to not think emotionally, we need to make a sound decision? Right there, you separate the emotion from a rational thought, the intellect from the emotion. And we see that, and we kind of take that away, because if we look at it and say, if we show emotion, the idea is we're going to avoid it because it might show that we're weak or that we don't have it all together. So these are reasons why we would avoid any kind of emotion, and you kind of see two sides of it. Some that are really emotional, and they don't lean into the thought process, or some that lean too much into the thought process and avoid emotion altogether. For various reasons. Sometimes it's just the way we're wired. But what if I were to tell you that this isn't just a now thing, that this happened long ago? You see, there were two philosophies that leaned into these two ways of thinking. And I'm going to explain a little bit, and you're probably like, why are we going to dive into something that existed 300 BCE? Both of them started 300 BCE. The reason is because when we dive into these two philosophies, what we're going to find out is that there was something that these two philosophies were missing, and why it was so important to follow Jesus, the significance of it, the impact of it. So the first one that we're going to dive into is These were the Epicureans, okay? This started because of a man named Epicurus. He was walking down the streets in Athens, and legend has it, is as he's walking, he's noticing that people are unhappy. Why are people unhappy? That question just rang in his mind, and what he did is he walked into a bookstore, and he started researching what makes people happy. Where he landed was where the Epicureans landed, which is to avoid any kind of pain, to live into the happiness, to live into what is good in life and avoid anything that's negative. We see that sometimes even today. I mean, if you look on Facebook, all you see is happiness, right? It's a world full of happiness and no pain, and this is what they want you to think. It's just not reality. And on the flip side, these were the Stoics, okay? The Stoics might look like my 4-year-old son, like this. I think he took my phone and made a selfie out of it, which is great. So, but what I find with him is I can tell him, go ahead and take a picture, and I'm like, smile. Everybody's smiling in my family, and there's Joshua doing this. We actually went to a basketball game yesterday, Notre Dame basketball game. Yeah, they lost. I kind of figured they would. But we went to a basketball game, and he got up, and I wish I had this picture. He got up on the Jumbotron on the screen, and it's called the Dance Cam. And here he is, and he's just like this. And it's, and the funny thing is that the Dance Cam has like these jumping letters. That's the only thing moving in this still shot here. We laugh about it because he's stoic. He's stone-faced. This is the other philosophy, is the Stoicism. This came because this man named Zeno, what ends up happening is he's a wealthy merchant. He gets on a ship, and when he gets on a ship, he has all of his belongings, all of his wealth, everything that he has that he identifies success with, it's all on that ship. That ship gets shipwrecked. He loses everything. How do I deal with that? The way he dealt with it was through Stoicism. This idea that you can't live into hope. Hope is the opium for any kind of emotion that needs to be stomped out. It was so bad that they leaned into the idea that we can't experience any hope. In fact, our comfort is going to come in finding the fact that we are going to think about all the bad things that happen, and when they do happen, we're not surprised. Because what they figured, and sorry for the kids in the room, they figured that if you were angry, that meant that you were stupid. The reason for it is because you should already be thinking of all the bad things that can happen in your life. And when they happen, you shouldn't be surprised. Therefore, you wouldn't be angry. This is how they dealt with that. So automatically, you see these two philosophies. You see the Epicureans, who would lean into their passion and not necessarily the rational thought. And then you saw, on the flip side of it, you saw the Stoics. They're the ones that wouldn't lean into any emotion, shoved them down, hid from them, ran from them, and said, I'm not going to experience any hope. I'm going to live right here. The Stoics, there was one Stoic that said, if you can't see the path to freedom, keep looking. All you have to do is turn over your wrist. You see how dark that is? Do you see the lack of hope that they experienced? For some of us, we actually experience that today. These two philosophies aren't a whole lot different than what we experience today. For some, all you have to do is turn on the news, and what you see is this in Syria and in Myanmar, this genocide that's happening. You see the shootings, I mean, right in Wyoming. You see these bad things happening. I was talking with my wife. We were sitting down, and where she works, she was representing a lawyer who has a case right now, and I can't go into a great detail. But the case that she was explaining had this horrific thing that happened to this family. And here I got to a point where I said, why do you continue to tell me this story? Like, I literally don't want anything to do with this story anymore. I'm watching football. This is my happy place. I want to avoid any kind of pain that you're talking about right now. Why are we continuing to talk about it? We do this often. Whether it's the Epicureans, where we want to live into just the happiness and avoid any kind of pain, or the Stoics, where we want to avoid any kind of emotion because we don't like the roller coaster. See, both of those are prevalent. And both of them miss something that is so vital to humanity. So vital. And there's a clue that we're given in Acts 17. And in this clue, you have Paul that is in, he's in Athens, and this letter that Luke writes in Acts, he depicts what happens when Paul is in Athens and he's approached by two different types of philosophies. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers, we kind of know what they are now, don't we, began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say? They can't understand it." Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. They couldn't get it. They couldn't understand it. They couldn't grasp what he was saying because there was hope there. Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus, about the resurrection, about the fact that when things do get bad, when their death does happen, there is life that is born out of it. And these two missed something in there. And the key to the life is the heart. And so what they missed was the heart. Could it be that if we have a better understanding of the heart, then it actually grows, we grow closer to God? Could it be that if we have a better understanding of the heart, what that does is it allows people to see Jesus in us? That's the tension. Could we have a better understanding of the heart? And in order to do so, we need to look at a prayer. And this is one of the most famous, this is the most famous prayer. And you might think it's the Lord's Prayer, but it's not. This is a prayer that was long before the Lord's Prayer. This is a prayer known as the Shema. And when I say that, okay, when I say the Shema, this is something that the Jewish people would recite twice daily, one in the morning, one in the evening. This is so well known, and you might not know it as the Shema, but when I recite it, you're going to recognize it. Chances are you will recognize it. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." Do you recognize that? You might recognize it as the greatest commandment. Jesus says, this is the greatest commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And right away, if we're to truly understand how to love the Lord your God, the first thing he introduces is humanity, the humanness in us, the heart. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. And the thing is that when we hear heart, we often misinterpret it. Because the thing that we think about heart is what we just went over, which is the emotional side of it, which is true, but that's not all of it. We actually misinterpret what the Hebrew word for heart is and what the Greek word for heart is. The Hebrew word for heart is levav. The Greek word for heart is cardia, which is probably what you recognize when you think of cardiovascular. These two words not only meant the passion and desire, the emotional side of the heart, but they also represented something else: the discernment, the intellect, the wisdom, the decision-making. You see, what we see in our philosophies and the philosophies of the Stoics and the Epicureans is they divided, which we often do, is the intellect and the emotional side of it. It's the idea that if you follow your heart, you're not thinking with your mind. But if we truly look at what the heart represented, the word for heart, what it meant was these two things were combined. You had the heart that represented the emotional side of it, but it was also the intellect, the discernment. So when he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, what he's saying is love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your emotion, with all your discernment, with all your decision-making, with all your levav, And sometimes we miss that. We miss the idea of saying, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and we immediately go to the emotional side of it. But if this was so important, and Jesus is saying this is the greatest commandment, we truly, this is something that we should understand because it shows us actually how he lived them. It gives us a new perspective when we look at stories of Jesus showing emotion, that there was some discernment, there was some decision making, it wasn't just emotional. Because if we're, what we need to realize is that Jesus was fully human and fully God. He wasn't just half or part. He was fully human. And he did show emotion. He showed that he wept and that he was angry. He showed that when he was upset, he wasn't afraid to show emotion. And we're going to go through two stories of him showing emotion. The first one is when Jesus is overlooking Jerusalem. And when he's overlooking Jerusalem, he sees something and it brings out an emotional reaction that some of us have experienced before. And when we see this kind of emotion, we need to pay attention to it. As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, if you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. You see, I don't want to read that with a bunch of anger. Because what we just learned is that Jesus wept. And when he's weeping, he's saying these words. You notice the sadness that comes from him. They will encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground. You and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you. You didn't recognize Jesus. You didn't recognize the hope. The Stoics and the Epicureans could not understand what Paul was saying. And here you have Jesus weeping. The next story that wasn't too long after that we're going to look at in Mark 11, verse 15 and 18. This is an emotion that we typically don't see, but when we do out of Jesus, we need to pay attention to it. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple courts and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money exchangers and the benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, this is meant with some anger. Is it not written, my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers. The chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began looking for a way to kill him, for they feared him because the whole crowd was amazed at his teaching. Okay, here is a flip side. Here is where Jesus all of a sudden shows a ton of emotion. And if we're being real, the fact is that Jesus had tons of opportunity to show a bunch of emotion before, didn't he? People would insult him. They would try to kill him. So this isn't the first time that Jesus has an opportunity to be angry. But yet this evoked so much emotion in him that he went down to the temple courts and started flipping over tables. What I want to do is I want to give you some context of what this would look like. There's a picture of the temple courts right here. And in here, where they would be selling their cattle and their sheep and their doves would be right in the court of the Gentiles. And in the court of the Gentiles, what that meant is the Gentile was somebody that was not of Jew, was not Jewish. So they're already an outsider. And why are you bringing cattle and sheep and doves? You're bringing them for a sacrifice because what you want to do is you want to know who God is. You want a relationship with God. And so you have these people who are bringing their cattle, their livestock, and chances are they're bringing them from a far distance. And so they're bringing them into the court of the Gentiles, the outside here, this big area, and here are the money exchangers allowing for a sacrifice to happen. And these money exchangers are the ones that know God. And the reason that he's so upset, the reason that he's overturning tables, get this, is because the money exchangers are taking advantage of the people who want to know God. They're ripping them off. he comes down there and he witnesses people that want to know who God is. They want a relationship with God. And what he witnesses are people who claim to know God taking advantage and keeping them from knowing them. What hypocrisy that we see here. And so when we see this, these are the widows and the orphans that want a sense of hope. Imagine how mad you would be if you saw somebody in such desperate need and wanting to know who God is, and then you saw somebody taking advantage of them. And this doesn't just have worldly implications. This is eternal implications. And here you have Jesus that's witnessing this whole thing, and all of a sudden what he says is, this can't happen anymore. This all has to stop. They have as much right to know who God is, and you can't take advantage of them. I don't like the greed and the conceit and the selfishness. I don't like all that stuff. And what he does is he leans into his emotion. You see, these two stories give us two primary reasons of why God reacted this way, why Jesus reacted this way. It's for those that had a lack of empathy and a lack of compassion that he got angry with. A lack of understanding what hope looked like. You see, he saw something that was tragic to him. He saw something that prevented people from knowing who God is, and that was tragedy for him. But yet he didn't respond the way that the Stoics do or the Epicureans did. The first thing that we should notice in how God responded, how Jesus responded, was that he responded in a way that he dove into his emotions. He didn't hide from them. He didn't run from them. He didn't push them down or suppress them. He actually leaned into them. And when I asked the question earlier about, okay, why did Jesus respond this way? What was it about these two stories that made him respond this way? The thing is that when he showed emotion, it was aimed at the mission of Jesus, at the mission that he had of helping people know who God was. It wasn't because somebody did something wrong to him. It wasn't out of selfishness. It wasn't out of conceit. It wasn't out of pride. What the reason that he did it is because he saw people that wanted to know who God was or had an opportunity to know who God was, and it didn't happen, and it evoked a bunch of emotion. The reason that he showed this emotion was because it was aimed at somebody knowing who God was. And it didn't happen. Jesus' levav, his discernment, his heart, was always aimed at the larger mission. And here's the thing is that because if you're sitting with someone and you sit at a party or you meet them at a party, which is going to happen now with a bunch of work parties and everything else, how close do you feel to somebody if you were to say, how are you doing? And they give you all the good things that are happening. Not a whole lot of depth there. Or you talk with somebody and they simply don't even go into anything. And it's just very surface. We've had those surface conversations. And sometimes it's hard to get into that depth, and I get it, especially at a Christmas party. But my point is that you truly don't know who a person is unless you start to see their heart and their levav, where the direction their life is going, the hope they have. When you start to experience that kind of depth, that's where you truly know who that person is. And the fact is that when we see Jesus with this kind of emotion, we get a sense of who Jesus is. We get a sense of who God is. I was talking with someone earlier this week, and they were having a tough time because they always saw God as this deity that is way up here. And I said, if you want to know who God is, you don't have to look any further than Jesus, because they know who Jesus is. And who Jesus was one that would show the human side of him, this emotion, this heart, this levav. And because of that, if we were to live like Jesus, if we were to show this emotion the way that Jesus does, it doesn't only allow us to grow closer to God, it allows people to see Jesus in us. It's not the Stoics and the Epicureans philosophy. It actually allows people to see how God loved them, the way that we love them. this might seem kind of abstract as a way that I would phrase it, but I want to share something with you. I want to share a verse in Romans, because we look at this and we say, yeah, that's how Jesus lived, but can we do this on our own? And the fact of the matter is that you don't have to do this on your own, is that you have a helper in this. And I want to read this passage. It's in Romans 8, verses 26 and 27. It says, likewise, the Spirit also helps in our weaknesses. For we do not know what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit himself makes intercession for us with groanings. Think about that for a minute. He uses the word groanings. That's not just a flat line. That is an emotional word. With groanings, which cannot be uttered. Now he who searches the hearts, the levav, the cardia, knows what the mind of the Spirit is. Do you see how those things match now? Because he makes intercession for the saints according to the will of God. He makes intercessions for the saints. If we're looking at a helper, if we're looking at saying, I don't know that I can do this, you're not alone. We have a helper. And if we look at the fruit of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and the last one is self-control. When we show that we are too emotional, we lose some of that self-control. Or if we show that we are too much in control, we lose some of that emotion. And the fact is that we have a levav that marries these two together, and we're not alone in doing it. And today, I want to remind us that we aren't alone. That you're not alone in dealing with some of your emotions and your feelings and what that looks like. Some of you might want to run from it and hide from it, but if we look at how Jesus lived, that's not how he lived. That we're to embrace them. Not only that, that we're to recognize that we're not alone. Not only is the Holy Spirit going to work within us to change our hearts from being hardened to softened, but also we have a community of people here that care a ton about you. And not only do we have an opportunity to walk with one another as we go through some of these hardships, but also we have an opportunity to join in Jesus and his mission as a community. And we have that opportunity today through the physical act of communion, where we get to remember what Jesus did for us. That this is the season that we remember that Jesus came to earth as a baby, born in a manger, born in human form. Think about something that is so human, and one of the first things that you think of is birth. And how did God enter this? He entered it through a baby, and we remember that. We remember what he did for us. And as we remember that, what my hope is that you recognize how much God loves you through this. And if you're accepting Jesus for the first time, I would love to have a conversation with you. Because there is nothing that would make me more happy than having a conversation with you about it. And whether you've done this before or this is your first time, my hope is that you recognize the significance of this, that we are doing this together in community of taking the simple act of taking the bread and dipping it in the juice is a simple reminder of the implications and the significance of what God did for us. So, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians, on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he gathered around with all of his friends, and they're all around a table. And if you think about the levav here, is that he's sitting around the table and he knows what's going to come next. Think about what is going on inside Jesus at this moment. His levav, not only his emotions, but his discernment, knowing that someone is going to betray him. And he sits around there, and when I talk about the Stoics and I talk about the Epicureans, is that they were there for kind of their own benefit. But here you have Jesus surrounded by people that he loves, some that are going to betray him, and he says these words. He says, this is my body, this bread. I give thanks and I break it. And when I break this bread and you take from it, do this in remembrance of me. And in the same way, after supper, he took the cup. And he said, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Drink from it and do this in remembrance of me. For whenever you eat of this bread and you drink from this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes again. You proclaim the hope in the resurrection. You live into the hope that Jesus came on this earth because he so loved us, he sent his son to die on the cross for us so we can have an eternal relationship with him, that we don't have to live into the darkness or avoid any of the emotions. Will you pray with me, please? Gracious God, I thank you for the reminder of how much you love us. God, that we can show emotion. And when we show emotion, God, that we grow closer to you. And so, God, I pray for strength, that's not always easy for all of us. God, I pray for comfort. I pray for wisdom. I pray for levav, God, that we are able to lean into our emotion, but also have the wisdom and the intellect. And God, I thank you for sending your son and the reminder that we have this season, that we are loved by you. And it's in your son's name we pray. Amen. The table is ready.